grab some popcorn and a favorite chair. The love of movies is why we're here. Press play and don't delay. Let Phil be our guide to a cinematic day. Phil at the movies, from the silver screen to his podcast stream. Phil's covering every movie dream. Phil at the movies.
And hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of Phil at the Movies. I am, of course, your host, Phil. And you are listening to show number 191 of this ongoing podcast that is, you guessed it, For the Love of Movies. And here we are. It is the second to last week of November. Next week, of course, will be Thanksgiving week. And I will certainly be enjoying my fair share of turkey and stuffing and all of the fixings. And I certainly hope that each of you have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Get some time to unwind and maybe check out some movies. And today I have a timely and topical film to share some thoughts on, which I have to say, spoiler alert, I did not expect to enjoy this film as much as I did. You could say I have been changed for the better because of it. And you astute listeners will know just what film I am talking about, but I will hold you all in suspense a few moments longer while I do a little bit of housekeeping and share some news with you before we begin with the main review. First off, thank you as always. This is the 191st episode. It would not be possible without you, the friends, you, the listeners of this show. I know I sound like a broken record week after week, but I mean it from the bottom of my heart. This would be impossible without all of you. So I am forever grateful for each of you for taking the time to tune into this show week after week and take part in this cinematic journey with me. 191 episodes and going strong. Here's to 200 and many, many more. Certainly many more films to discuss before 2025 ends, and certainly a lot to talk about in 2026. So just from the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you. And of course, as always, this is for the love of movies. Now, switching gears a little bit, I wanted to share an announcement with you. Beginning in December, I will be launching another podcast effort with my buddy Nick from Nick Flix Podcast. I think he was on the show back in September where we did a retrospective on Jaws at 50. Well, we have decided to team up and combine our podcasting efforts and our love of movies to create a new show, Nick Flix and Phil at the Movies. Yes, sort of a great combination of both of our podcast titles brought together. It's going to be a monthly show. We're dropping the first episode the beginning of December. You can actually find a teaser for the show now available in your podcast feeds. And it's going to be much more of a conversational style week or episode. We're going to drop a new show probably at least once a month, focusing more on discussions and kind of answering or talking about current movie news of the day, as well as talking about certainly current as well as past films and films that we both love. So it's going to be kind of a movie bowl session, if you will, and we're really looking forward to it. So if you haven't had your fill of me here, I would love for you to give that show a follow and a like when it drops beginning in December, and I'll certainly plug it in the show notes as well as make an announcement at the appropriate time. But again, this show will continue on every Friday for the love of movies, but I wanted to just share with you this new podcasting venture that I am beginning with my friend, and we're really excited about it. Again, when two people get together who love movies, it's a great time. So we're making movie magic over the podcasting sphere, if you will. So that's on the horizon in the next couple weeks. And then lastly, just some kind of excitement because we're getting into that time where we can start thinking about 2026 movies. I know, perish the thought that we're thinking about the year ahead, but as many of you know, I am a huge fan of Christopher Nolan, his filmography, and his upcoming film, The Odyssey, is without question my most anticipated film, not only of next year, but of the next couple years. I am stoked, beyond stoked, to see this movie. And we're starting to get a little bit of a tease. There have been images released, which I am just blown away by. The fact that Christopher Nolan has shot this film entirely with IMAX cameras is another wonderful accomplishment. I'm just really excited about this movie, and I apologize in advance for how insufferable I will become over the next 6 to 7 months in anticipation for this movie. But as I said, I love his filmography. As you all know, I've talked about it just a little bit here on the show, but I am pumped, to say the least, for this movie. And now that we're starting to get some images, there's magazine articles trickling out, and we will be getting a full trailer in December, I will have to probably force myself to go see the new Avatar movie against my will just to see this new trailer, because I just have to experience the magic and the awe on the big screen. You know, I'll just, you know, bolt and leave after the trailer, because I frankly have no interest in the Avatar films, but that's for a discussion for another day. But any event, that is the Christopher Nolan news to share. Haven't done an update on the Odyssey front, but things are starting to move in that direction, so expect more updates and me gushing about the film in the weeks ahead. I'll probably do a reaction to the trailer when it drops in December, so look for that in your feeds. But all right, that takes care of the housekeeping end of today's show. Let me begin now with my review for Wicked for Good. Wicked for Good, the second part of the Wicked movie released last year, which encompasses the second act of the Broadway play on which the films are based. Wicked is the hit Broadway show, which in turn was based on the novel Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West by author Gregory Maguire, published in 1995. Wicked, as a whole, tells the story of how Elphaba Fropp, a green-skinned woman living in the Land of Oz, gifted with extraordinary powers, ultimately becomes an outcast and pariah after exposing the Wizard of Oz as a fraud. She, in turn, later becomes the face of wickedness in the Land of Oz, a.k.a. the Wicked Witch of the West. The film, like the play, documents her friendship with Glinda, the Good Witch, and the machinations going on in the Land of Oz, all happening before and later during the arrival of a little girl from Kansas. The second film watches as Elphaba embraces her moniker as the Wicked Witch of the West, and we see the classic story told through the eyes of other key players in Oz. Now, I'll be L. Frank Baum with you. I was lukewarm on Wicked Part 1. And again, there's a reason why I didn't cover it on the podcast. Not that it is a bad film. It certainly is visually appealing. The performances are strong. There's certainly the wonderful connection to The Wizard of Oz. But for some reason, the movie just never connected with me. And I felt even the same way with the musical. I've seen it, I've read the novel, and it's always just sort of been a one-and-done experience for me. And I think part of it is I genuinely have a hard time separating the performance by Margaret Hamilton in The Wizard of Oz as the Wicked Witch with any adaptation that tries to paint the witch in a different light, just because she is so iconically evil and wicked in the 1939 film, it's very hard to separate those two, that performance with any other interpretation. But even putting that all aside, musicals can be a mixed bag. They really have to be something special. And for me, the first film just wasn't that. I kind of felt like I was at the end of a theater, way in the back, the nosebleed seats, and I was sort of watching everything from afar. And you know, everybody, you know, was around me, was loving it, having a great time, and I just for some reason was not. It did not get on the bandwagon or the hype train of Wicked. So, needless to say, I went into this film with my expectations maybe not low, but certainly in check. I was not expecting the film to, certainly dazzle me or take me on a trip down the yellow brick road. But I am really delighted to say that my expectations were surpassed with this film. Wicked for Good is not only a good film, it's a great film. And I think it is heads and shoulders above the first film in this two-part series. And I think partly because, one, I found the performances to be much stronger than in the previous entry. I thought all of the cast, from Cynthia Erivo to Ariana Grande to Jonathan Bailey, everybody really seemed to kind of grow into their characters and really just sort of gave it their all. It was like, you know, literally just bearing their heart and soul in each moment and scene. And it kind of, it is like the second act in a play. I mean, it is the second act of the play, but, you know, famously, second acts are always better than the first, because the first one, you have to set everything up, and in act two, that's always the part where everything goes to hell in a handbasket. That's the excitement, that's the rising event, and it's usually the best act in a play, and that is the case, I think, with this film. Wicked for Good just delivers. It really does. From a visual experience, I thought it looked sharper. The colors, everything about this film screamed The Wizard of Oz. And yet it was its own take on it. I mean, obviously because of the legalities and copyright, you know, you can't have it be like the movie per se, but this felt like a wonderful homage to both the 1939 film, the book by L. Frank Baum, and then just their own creation in the world of Wicked. I was dazzled by the just the look of this film. But even the songs, the music felt more lively. It felt like everything had just been kicked up a notch. And it's actually quite emotional. I was really captivated by the story here, because you really see only glimpses of it in the first film, but in this second part, you see how this poor woman, Elphaba, she is sort of outcast and turned into this social pariah, a victim of governmental propaganda, and made into this figure of wickedness, when in actuality she was anything but. And I kind of like how they sort of put that front and center, and then as she tries to make amends, as she tries to get things back on track, she ultimately realizes that she's just going to embrace her alter ego, if you will, this wicked moniker that has been thrust upon her. And it's quite a tour de force. I mean, Cynthia Erivo really hit it out of the park with this film. And again, for a character that is so iconic and linked with Margaret Hamilton's performance, I thought she really made it her own and put her own stamp on the Wicked Witch of the West, which is not only a frightening character, because she does have a few good moments of wickedness, if you will, but also a tragic character, and one that you felt for and you're rooting for the entire time. And that's the real wonderful switch of the Wicked story. It really is putting you in the perspective of the Wicked Witch and seeing how things were through her eyes, as opposed to following Dorothy and the gang down the Yellow Brick Road. Now, Dorothy does appear in the film, but spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, they do not show an actress's face. They really keep Dorothy out of frame, out of focus, which I thought was just a masterclass, because certainly you don't want to draw comparisons with Judy Garland. You don't want to introduce somebody else as Dorothy, because that's going to take over the entire story. This isn't her piece. Dorothy is merely a sort of a side player in this entire event. This is the story of Elphaba. This is a story of Glenda. This is a story of Fiero, who, spoiler alert, later becomes the Scarecrow. I mean, there's a lot of great little nods and Easter eggs that happen in this film. And I was loving every bit of it, but it all ties together nicely with the events of the book and the movie. And again, it's not a literal adaptation or direct connection, but it's nice to sort of see the symmetry, if you will, and everything all tying together in a neat little bow. And you know, all roads lead to Oz, if you will, and certainly in this particular case, that happens in more ways than one. But the story itself is really riveting, because you see how someone can be ostracized for their beliefs and for standing up for what is right. Jeff Goldblum, who plays the wizard, he has just a brief appearance in the first film. He really gets a lot of good scenery in this movie, and he's always a delight in any role that he's in, but I love what he was able to bring to the character of the wizard, because the wizard's always been sort of a fraud and a snake oil salesman in any adaptation of the story. And I like that he was able to bring a sort of charm and sleaziness, but also a sense of pathos to his character, that this guy truly has no power. He's just one great con, and he's feeding off of people's fears and anxieties and hopes, and creating this image. And then, of course, juxtaposing what happens with the, you know, sort of the propaganda of the Wicked Witch of the West and turning her into this villain for all of Oz to hate. It was really well done. Certainly felt like a wonderful, or not necessarily wonderful, but a timely and topical piece that would tie into, you know, certainly, you know, a lot of moments in history, but certainly felt relevant to this politically charged era that we find ourselves in. But I mean, again, politics is no stranger to the land of Oz. But back to the film itself, the real heart of this story is the friendship of Glenda, played by Ariana Grande, and of course, Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West. And it's really a tragedy, because you have these two best friends who are like sisters, and they want to join forces, they want to be on the same side, but because of the politics of it all, because of their differences, because of who Elphaba is, because of who Glenda is, it just can't work. And it's really heart-wrenching to see this friendship sort of splinter, but yet at the same time, they have that connection, and ultimately they are better people because of their friendships with one another. And there's a really powerful moment towards the end of the film where they do reunite, and they have a song where they talk about how each of them has changed each other for the better. Literally the tagline of the movie, you know, change for good. And that's definitely what you see going on there. And Erivo and Grande just, they hit it out of the park. I mean, it's just a performance-wise, it's a 10 out of 10, but just the emotional weight and what they're projecting. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the audience that I saw tonight. I kid you not. I was getting misty eyed. I saw this film with my two younger sisters, and they were both getting emotional. It really did land that punch that I was looking for going into the first film, and I think maybe seeing both of them together might give me a different perspective on the whole thing together, because I found this to be one of those cases where the sequel surpasses the original. And this is not a sequel in the traditional sense, because it is part two, it is the second act of the play, but it just felt like everything was sharper, everything was fresher, everything was better than what was in the first film. And again, maybe it's because the first film just didn't click for me. This one just knocked it right out of the park. I mean, like I said, I felt like I was going to the Emerald City and following the Yellow Brick Road. It was that kind of an immersive experience. And it just the beauty of it all. And I think probably tying it all together with The Wizard of Oz, having it as the overarching connection, that probably helped really drive it home for me, because it was fun to see sort of the classic story but told through a different perspective and sort of see what was going on through Glenda's eyes or through Elphaba's eyes. I like how we see different events through different people's perspective as opposed to what we normally see, whether we read the book or, of course, see the classic film. But no, this was a really special movie. And I saw a couple of reviews earlier this week that sort of were critical of the Wizard of Oz of it all, sort of the tying in to the film. And I sort of have to stop and scratch my head, because I'm like, that's sort of the whole point of this. I mean, this is a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, more or less. This is sort of the backstory of what was going on before Dorothy arrived, and then later while she was on her way to the Emerald City. So I didn't really understand, you know, people's having issue with that. And I remember seeing a few of those reviews earlier in the week and thinking to myself, well, I mean, it should tie into The Wizard of Oz. But, you know, again, to each his own. But I like seeing sort of the backstory of how the Tin Man came to be, how the Cowardly Lion came to be, how the Scarecrow fits into all of it. There's a lot of nice nods and homages to all of these characters, and some interesting surprises. The creation of the Cyclone and the Twister that brings Dorothy's house to Oz. Again, a lot of that stuff was nice little Easter eggs that certainly, again, as a fan of the book and the movie, they were nice surprises. So that's definitely enhances the entire movie for me. But ultimately, it is the story of Elphaba and Glenda and Grande and Arrivo. They sell it. They really put all of it on the line with this film, and they knock it out of the park. They absolutely knock it out of the park. There's a particular scene at the very end where they're just belting it out, and it really makes it all that much better. It really was one of those kind of films where it just stays with you on an emotional level, because the performances are so raw and powerful and just it tragic at the same time, as you're watching this friendship that can't survive despite, you know, all of their best efforts, and you feel that as an audience. The film it really stuck with me. It's a dazzling movie the way it looks. I thought just everything came together better and tenfold than what had happened on part one. And again, the fact that this ties it all together in a neat little bow, couldn't ask for anything more. So, Wicked for Good. It is imaginative, it is funny, it is beautiful, it is immersive, it is poignant. It is a wonderful trip back down that yellow brick road, and for me, especially memorable, because not only was I able to revisit this land and the nostalgia of the movie and the connections with the original story, but to have my expectations, as I said, defied and subverted in the best possible way, it really made it all the more memorable and enjoyable a movie for me. So maybe this means there'll be a full retrospective of Wicked down the road. Maybe I have truly been changed for good on the entire Wicked saga. I don't know. We'll see. But in any event, Wicked for good. It is not only good, but it is great. And that does it for me today, everybody. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to listen to today's episode. Appreciate you giving this a like and a follow. Drop a rating on Apple Podcasts. Helps with growing the podcast, and that pesky algorithm gets us all into the appropriate podcast feeds and queues and all of that stuff. Let's all get our P's and Q's in order. But in any event, just thank you for taking the time to listen to today's show. That does it for me. Wishing you all a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Go check out some movies. Support your local theater. Of course, buy physical media. And yes, I'll be back next week where we'll do this all over again for the love of movies.
Still at the movies makes every movie.